We already had a few healers here. What more could you have done? He asks.
Guys, can you cut it out? You're here now, Kels. Thank you. I'm guessing your vision was of me being stabbed. You sent Enzo?
I ask. I look up for him, but notice Enzo must have crept out of the room at some point since Kelly walked in. Because he's sure as hell not here now, unless he's gained powers of invisibility.
The asshole just left. He was there when I had my vision. I told him you were in trouble, and he was gone off to find you. I've never seen anyone run so fast,
Kelly answers. He didn't run fast enough, East mutters, glaring at the open door. A hand rubs up and down my leg comfortingly. I look down and smile at Locke, who continues to rub his hand across my leg.
He ran straight to her. He couldn't have got in there quicker if he tried, Logan says, resting a hand on East's shoulder, but he shrugs it off. Fuck off. He should have called us. I was closer. I could have got in there in time if he had called, he replies.
She wouldn't have been alone in the first place had you not been kicked out from class for stripping. Locke snaps, standing up.
You helped come up with that plan,
East shouts back at him. Locke opens his mouth to reply, when a loud bang hits against the wall, grabbing all our attention.
Enough! All of you fucking get out, and don't come back until you start acting like adults,
Mr. Daniels snaps. His fist has dented the wall. That must have hurt.
Kelly, you may stay,
he adds more softly. She nods and sits down on a chair next to the bed.
Hey, I didn't do anything,
Logan complains.
Blame your brother for your removal,
Mr. Daniels says dryly.
Fuck's sake,
he mutters, moving to leave the room after East and Locke.
Would you mind leaving too? I just want to be with my bestie,
I say softly to Mr. Daniels. He frowns but nods and leaves at my request, closing the door softly behind him.
Why did you want to be alone?
Kelly asks, after a tense moment of silence.
I had a dream while I was unconscious, but it was confused. I think it may have been a vision,
I admit.
And?
She asks, knowing there is more.
I want you to try and see if there is more,
I ask.
I can't right this second. I'm wiped out from the vision of you being stabbed earlier. That really hurt,
she mutters.
You felt it?
I ask.
Yeah, it was weird. In the vision, it was as if I was you. I felt everything, and I mean everything. Gods, Kenzie, that really fucking hurt, and the smoke was horrible. I could feel you choking on it as Enzo came in,
she explains.
That is weird. I'm sorry you had to feel that, Kels,
I say, grabbing her hand.
It's okay. I'm glad I did. Enzo got you in time. You're gonna be okay,
she says, a tear rolling down her face.
Don't cry,
I say, hearing the thickness in my own voice.
My best friend almost died, and I felt it. I think I'm entitled to a few tears,
she replies, more tears chasing the others.
But I'm fine, honestly. I'll be okay. You said so yourself,
I reply, squeezing her hand.
I know, she says softly. But I'll feel better once you are back on your feet. I'll try and look for your future later, but you know how unpredictable visions are, she says. I know, but it's worth a shot, right?
I ask.
Worth a shot, she affirms,
sitting back in her seat and stealing a blanket off the bottom of the bed.
Getting comfy?
I question.
Might as well. I'm not going anywhere, she answers, smiling at me.
Her phone starts ringing and she hands it over to me as I give her a questioning look.
I told Ryan,
she says, and I groan, glaring at her as I answer the call.
Hey, bro,
I say, and I hear a big sigh of relief on the other end.
Kenny, shit, I was so worried. Are you okay?
He asks me, sounding stressed.
Yeah,
Well, kind of, I reply, trying not to move too much on the bed as my stomach is killing me.
Has no one healed you yet?
He asks, picking up on something in my voice, I guess. The blade was laced with marked powers. They can't heal me completely, but I will get better soon. I tell him, and I hear him hit something.
Shit! I should have been there or something. I have to go, Kenny, and I'm going to sort this all out.
He tells me, and I frown, knowing there isn't much he can do. Is the council going to send your team out after Mr. Layen? I ask. My voice comes out funny, and I grip my teeth from the pain in my stomach as I shift position.
Not exactly, but don't worry about it, he says, making me want to worry about him even more.
I rest my head back as everything starts to get a bit blurry. A roaring sound fills my ears.
Here, let me, Kelly says, her voice sounding faded as she takes the phone from me.
I can faintly hear her whispering to Ryan just as I fall asleep, but I am already too far gone to catch the words. Chapter 27. Kenzie.
There's still been no signs of Mr. Layen, Mr. Daniels says, his voice void of emotion as he slips his phone back into his pocket.
2 weeks. It's been 2 fucking weeks since I was stabbed, and they haven't found him. I had started my classes again after only a week. Thankfully, even without healing powers working fully, I had healed much faster than a human ever would. Not so thankfully. Mr. Daniels had been making me take extra classes with him every single day since. I eye up his muscular frame leaning against the kitchen counter. The man is terrifyingly impressive. If I could even soak up a little of his abilities in fighting and defense, I would be happy. But he wanted perfect. So, for 3 hours every day we have been sparring, using our magical abilities and a mixture of physical fighting. The amount I was getting my ass kicked was embarrassing, especially since he'd said he was even going a little easier on me. When I told him to stop doing that yesterday, damn, I wish I'd kept my mouth shut. The ache in my muscles is unreal. Are they even looking? I mutter. Yes, of course they are looking. They have practically the entire council out looking. He seems to have planned his getaway meticulously, Miss Crow. He answers. I shove my cornflakes away, my appetite gone. I have protection class, and it's my first one, as I couldn't get to the others with training and everything, so I should go, I say, and he looks over at me, a worried frown appearing on his handsome face.
You're not going to be late for class, he jokes, making me smile slightly as he tries to cheer me up.
But when I place my hand on my stomach, feeling the slightly raised scar that I will always have through my thin t-shirt, my smile disappears. I grab my phone and walk out, waving goodbye to Mr. Daniels. I walk towards the school and use the Academy app to find my way to the right classroom. The corridors are surprisingly quiet. When I find the classroom on the second floor, I knock before opening the door and walking in. The room is empty, and I check my phone once more, seeing that I'm in the right place, and sit down on one of the chairs that are placed in rows in the middle of the room. I hear the bell ring a few seconds later, and look up as the twins walk into the room, smiling when they see me. Locke sits on my left, sliding his arm around my chair, and Logan sits on my other side, his hand brushing mine.
Early to class. I'm shocked, Logan whispers as 5 more students walk into the room. It is shocking, Logan agrees.
I'm not late to everything, I say, and they both laugh.
I go to ask Logan what he's doing here, when a teacher walks into the room and slams the door shut, making herself jump. The teacher looks in her mid-30s with long blonde hair, a sweet face that makes her look young, and she is wearing a long jumper and jeggings. She looks beautiful, but normal. It's shocking compared to the teachers in this place.
Silly door,
she mumbles, walking into the classroom and dropping her bag on the floor. She spots both twins sitting in the room and frowns.
"Which one of you isn't meant to be in here?" she asks.
They both shrug and keep their mouths shut. She sighs and looks around the rest of the room.
"Fine. Both of you stay. So, hi, everyone.
Except you. You're new?" she asks me, smiling as she walks over and offers me her hand to shake. I shake her hand as I speak.
"I'm Mackenzie, and I haven't been able to come to class before this."
She nods as understanding washes over her face.
"Miss Perfect, with 12 marks, can't even defend herself against an old teacher,"
I hear whispered from behind me. The comment is met with laughter as my cheeks go red. It wasn't like that, but this is all I've been hearing all week in my classes. Luckily, the guys are always with me and defend me. Even Enzo did, despite the fact he isn't talking to me since he saved my life. I remember in the vision how he kissed my forehead, how close we got on that sofa, and now nothing. It was beyond frustrating and confusing. "Dickhead," Locke mutters angrily and stands up, lifting his hand and sending the two students flying into the air and landing on their asses across the room.
"Nice one, twin,"
Logan laughs, sliding his hand into mine.
"What the hell?"
one of the guys says as he stands up, offering a hand to his friend. Locke goes to step forward when the teacher puts her hand in front of him, and a large ward appears, spreading around Locke and keeping him trapped in place. I don't think Locke is really trapped as he doesn't fight it, but looks down at me.
"Locke or Logan, whichever one you are, that was not nice," she says to him before turning toward the student who was whispering. "But neither were your comments to Mackenzie. I want everyone to sit down, and if I hear any more comments or use of the air mark, then I will kick you all out," she says firmly, smoothing down her dress and sighing.
"Now, I'm Miss Ash, but you can call me Tia," she says to me gently, as she lowers the ward around Locke, and he grumpily returns to his seat. I hear the other guys sit down behind me as Tia carries on talking.
"So, in previous classes we have been testing our protection ward and going over the various uses we have for it," she tells us. "I want you to pair up and carry on the testing we have been doing in the last few lessons. Mackenzie, I will pair up with you, and we shall start at the beginning," she tells me, and I nod, standing up, as everyone else does, and letting go of Logan's hand. I walk over to Tia, and she gestures for me to stand in front of her.
"So, have you used your protection ward before?" she asks me.
"Yes, I used it to block a pain mark being used on me. And then I used it again when Mr. Layan..."
I let my words drift off, and she nods, a sympathetic look crossing over her face. "I heard what weapon he used. Wards cannot protect against mark-laced weapons."
"I figured that one out," I whisper.
"Also, Mr. Layan is very well trained with his 10 marks, and you still survived. If anything, you should be proud of yourself. I don't believe I would survive a fight against him," she tells me gently, and I can't do anything but nod at her.
"Well, why don't you show me how you used the ward before?" she asks, and I close my eyes, imagining the protection ward and holding my hand up.
The moment I start feeling my hand going warm, I imagine the look on Mr. Layan's face as my ward failed and that dagger went through my stomach. I remember the pain, the fire, and the smoke, the feeling of helplessness as I choked.
"I can't,"
I stumble out, dropping my hand and turning around. I'm gone, running out the door and down the corridor as I hear Locke and Logan shouting my name behind me. I used protection fine with Mr. Daniels, so why can't I do it on my own? Why do I keep remembering that night?
"Kenz,"
Logan says as he catches up with me, grabbing onto my arm to stop me running anymore. When I look up at him, he pulls me into his arms and hugs me.
Seconds later, I feel Locke rubbing a hand down my back as I try to get my breathing under control.
What happened?
Logan asks me gently, and I shake my head, not wanting to talk about it at all.
I have an idea. You need to relax a little, or work and no play can't be good for you.
Where should we go? Logan asks Locke. The restricted place? It could be fun,
Locke replies, and I let Logan take my hand, walking me down the corridor. Locke takes my other hand, entwining our fingers.
Where are we going?
I ask, feeling stressed and tired. Locke is right. It's been too much training with Mr. Daniels, all my lessons, and then getting only 5 minutes a day to see anyone else before collapsing in bed.
Well, I may have a key to the entrance pool of the academy,
Locke says, pulling out his set of keys and flashing me an old-looking one. I laugh despite my mood, and he nods his head towards the big doors that lead to the pool.
What on earth are we going to do down there?
I ask, and it's Logan that answers in a whisper as Locke opens the door.
Skinny dipping, what else?
You, me, and Locke naked, I blurt out as he moves closer and shocks me by pressing his lips gently against mine, before pulling away before it can be classed as a real kiss.
That's the plan,
he says, chuckling at my red cheeks and little smile.
Quick,
Locke says and opens the door slightly, so we can slide in and stops my imagination from going into overdrive about the thought of seeing them both naked. Locke turns on the flashlight on his phone as we walk down the steep steps, and I look down, seeing a lump of fabric at the bottom of the steps.
What's that?
I ask. But the twins don't answer me as they both tense up. Logan quickly pushes me gently behind him as Locke steps closer.
What don't they want me to see?
I look around Logan's shoulder, and my eyes focus and take in the body at the bottom of the steps. I take an instant step back when I see the familiar white, long hair and black cloak, but then I notice the blood around his neck and all over his hair. Mr. Leyen is dead. I spot a piece of paper in his hand. As much as I hate the man for what he did, I don't want to see him dead like this. He deserved to die, but not having his throat slit and used to carry a message.
What does the note say?
I ask as Locke steps closer and looks around before kneeling next to Mr. Leyen, pulling the note from his hand. Locke comes over, giving me a worried look as he shows me the note. My heart almost stops as I read the name at the top.
It's addressed to me,
I whisper, flipping the note over and reading the message on the other side. Miss Crow, a present for you. We shall meet soon. A friend.
What kind of friend leaves you a dead body?
Logan asks, having read the note over my shoulder.
Not the kind of friend I'd like to keep,
I reply, feeling sick to my stomach.
I'll call Mr. Daniels. You get Kenzie back to the cabin,
Locke says to his brother.
Why are we leaving?
I ask as Logan already starts to tug me back up the stairs.
A man who attempted to kill you shows up dead, and you're the one to find the body, in a place you shouldn't even be able to get into. Who do you think they'll consider as a suspect?
Shit,
I mutter, seeing his point.
Come on, Locke and Mr. Daniels will take care of it. But as far as anyone else is concerned, you never saw that body. Okay, Kenzie?
He says, hurrying me out the door. I stare back at the door as we walk away from it.
Are we clear?
He asks, sliding a hand into mine.
Crystal,
I answer. I screw up the note in my other hand and shove it into my pocket, wishing I really hadn't seen the body. Chapter 28. Kenzie. I instantly regret the decision to have breakfast with my friends in the dining hall as soon as I walk in. Eyes follow me everywhere I walk, and silence or whispers are all I am greeted with. Great. News travels fast in the academy.
I grab my food, then spot East, Kelly, and Enzo at our usual table, and make my way over. Taking the seat between Easton and Kelly, I silently push my food around my plate. Other than a few hushed hellos as I sit down, our table keeps to the quiet that encompasses the rest of the room. I shovel some food in my mouth, not really tasting it. The silence is broken by the sound of laughter and chatting as the twins walk in, acting completely oblivious to the tension in the room. It has the effect of a popped balloon. Suddenly, everyone is talking again. They chat loudly as they grab their food and make their way across to us. They take their seats at the table, across from me and either side of Enzo.
"You all look cheerful today,"
Locke says, tucking into his food like he doesn't have a care in the world. "Yeah, because dead bodies just fill us with cheer," I mutter.
"He tried to kill you, Kenzie. I can't say I'm filled with sadness,"
he replies, taking a big bite of toast. "Still, I don't think that after we found..."
"So, Kenzie, what classes do you have today?"
Kelly quickly asks, changing the subject. I'm about to ask her what her deal is when I realize what I'd almost said. Shit. I almost blew the "who really found the body" secret the very next day. The only people who know are Mr. Daniels and the people sitting around this table with me right now. I need to keep it that way.
I only have Earth class today, as air is cancelled.
The normal teacher is still sick. Apparently they're one of those people who reject marked healing, I answer.
"Who would reject healing?"
Kelly asks, a frown crossing her face. "I'm not sure, but after having healing not work properly on my stomach wound, I will never take it for granted again," I reply.
"You up for cutting class today, Kenz?" Logan asks.
"Yes, because that went so well last time," I whisper.
"You need a break. You're exhausted,"
he says softly, reaching for my hand across the table.
"Yeah, maybe I do need a break, but it can wait till this afternoon. If any of you have a free period, do you want to come over to the cabin and hang out? I know Mr. Daniels is elsewhere today,"
I ask everyone.
"I have a class, but I'm more than happy to skip it," Locke says. "Count me in,"
Logan adds.
"I was meant to be in air with you, so you know I'm free,"
East says, giving me a small smile.
"I'll be there, Crow," Enzo answers, standing. "But I've got something to do right now. I'll see you all later,"
he adds, and then turns to leave, walking quickly and with purpose. He's gone before we can ask him where he's off to. I turn to Kelly for her answer.
"Well?"
I ask, smiling.
"I'm free, lesson-wise. I have plans, but can come later,"
Kelly says softly.
"Plans?"
I question.
"Don't sound so surprised,"
she says quickly.
"What are you doing?"
I ask her, the look on her face making me concerned.
"Who are you? My keeper?"
she snaps, standing up.
"Don't snap at Kenzie like that,"
Locke says to Kelly.
"Crap, what is even happening here?"
"Kelly, what's up with you?" I ask her, not really understanding the abrupt change in her behavior.
"Nothing, I just have plans. I'm sorry for snapping. I'll see you later."
She stumbles out as she turns to leave.
"Kelly, wait up,"
I say, standing.
"Just leave me alone, Kenz. I have something to sort out,"
she replies. She quickly makes her way out of the dining hall as I take my seat again.
"That was weird," East comments.
"No fucking kidding," I mumble, staring at the door. "What is up with her recently?" I feel East nudge me gently in the side.
"Finish your breakfast, Kenz,"
he says gently. I push the food around my plate, making a show of taking a few bites so as not to concern the guys. But the food is tasteless. I look up at the door again. "I will find out what's going on with you, Kelly, even if I have to follow you to do it." Chapter 29. Kenzie. After making my excuses to the guys about why I'm going to be late, I sneak off in search of Kelly. Luckily, it isn't too hard to find her.
I spot her making her way hurriedly across the courtyard by her dorm building.
Gotcha.
I follow at a distance, trying to keep out of her sight. I feel a bit like a creeper following my best friend around, but I know when something is up. There is most definitely something going on with my best friend right now, and I intend to find out what. I follow her quietly, trying to figure out where the hell she is going. It only becomes clear when I spot the building up ahead, the abandoned dorm building. Who is she meeting here? She slinks around the back of the building, and in through the back door that has again been left ajar. I wait a few minutes, hoping she's moved within the building enough to not hear me follow her inside. Creeping as quietly as possible to the door, and slipping into the building. I try to focus on what's around me, but it's so dark in here. Damn it, why didn't I bring my phone to use as a light? I wait for a minute, allowing my eyes to adjust to the darkness. I slowly step further into the building, doing a quiet search of the lower floor, before determining that Kelly must have gone upstairs. Fuck, I hope they don't creak. Moving quietly up the stairs, I tentatively place my foot on each step, only slowly adding my weight. Eventually, I make it to the top of the stairs. Only having taken 3 steps away from the stairs, I freeze when I hear a voice. Kelly's voice.
I cannot believe what you're doing, Kelly's voice says.
It's for the greater good. You should understand,
a man's voice replies. A familiar voice. I move toward the voices.
The greater good. They killed a man,
Kelly snaps.
A man that tried to kill your best friend,
he replies.
Murder is wrong, no matter who it is you're killing. They could have handed him over to the council and had him tried legally,
Kelly argues. My heart is thudding in my chest as I reach the door at the end of the corridor, where the voices appear to be coming from.
I didn't kill him,
he replies.
You may as well have. You helped dump the body here. I saw it, she snaps.
Wait, what?
Kelly saw the people leave the body.
Nobody saw us,
he grunts.
I saw it in a vision. I saw you put the note into his hand for Kenzie. How could you do that to her?
She asks.
He tried to kill her. He deserved it,
he replies.
His voice. It can't be. You can't be serious. You know I love you. But how am I meant to keep this to myself?
Kelly whispers. Kelly loves him. There has to be a mistake here, surely. I move to try and sneak a peek through the crack in the door.
I want us to be together, Kelly, but it's too dangerous right now. We will be together soon, and none of this will matter. Once his plan is in motion, we won't have to hide any more,
he says softly, an almost promising tone to his voice. I catch a glimpse of the man with his hood up standing next to Kelly. He's placed a hand on her cheek. I feel sick to my stomach. I can't watch this.
I can't. You can't trust them. What if they are going to hurt her? I heard the rumors that they were here for her the day they attacked, Kelly says.
They're not going to hurt Kenny. They need her. You should know I wouldn't let them hurt her,
he says, sounding a little offended by the idea.
Why do they need her? Kelly asks.
I can't tell you right now, Kelly, but it'll all be clear soon. Just trust me,
he pleads.
I don't know if I can.
She replies so quietly I barely catch it. I watch through the crack in the door as he pulls down his hood, his back to me. He leans down, and they kiss.
How did I not see this coming?
Trust me, he says again.
He turns slightly, and I dart back, afraid he'll spot me. I back away, not able to listen to this conversation anymore. My brother, my best friend, is in love with my brother. And even better,
He's involved with Mr. Layan's murder. This cannot be happening. I make my way back out of the old dorm building as quietly but quickly as possible. Once I'm outside, I run. I run straight through the woods and toward the cabin, needing to get far away from there. A body crashes into mine, knocking and then pinning me to the ground. Fuck. I look up at Enzo's face staring down at mine.
Why the fuck are you running through the woods? I shouted for you 6 times, and you just kept running,
he snaps.
You shouted,
I whisper.
Well, duh,
he replies sarcastically, his face painted with annoyance.
I'm sorry,
I mumble, trying to wriggle out of his hold.
Hey, don't go timid on me, Crow. I was just messing around. Are you okay?
He asks, brushing my hair out of my face. I look up into his dark eyes and shake my head.
What's wrong?
He questions softly.
I don't know who to trust,
I reply quietly, letting out a sigh.
You know you can trust me, right?
He says.
Trust you?
I ask, a small smile crossing my lips.
Always,
he replies. And then he closes the distance between us, pressing his lips to mine. I gasp from shock, not expecting the kiss. He goes to pull away, and I slide a hand around his neck and pull him back, returning the kiss. He tangles his hand in my hair, deepening the kiss between us, before pulling away and quickly standing back up. I can't help but feel like the kiss was over way too quickly.
Come on then. The others will wonder where you've gotten to if we're late,
he says, no sign in his voice that what had just happened had happened.
Okay,
I reply, slowly getting to my feet. He leads the way back to the cabin, and as I follow him, I can't help but wonder what has him so hot and cold. 1 minute he's talking to me, flirting with me, and now kissing me, and then another. He's ignoring me and acting as if there is nothing at all between us. Shaking my head to myself, I resign myself to the fact that Enzo is confusing, but that I have bigger fish to worry about. Enzo may be hot and cold, but Kelly loves Ryan. Ryan is an accomplice in a murder. And the rebels need me for something. When did life get this messed up? Chapter 30. Kenzie.
Okay, that's it. What's wrong, Kenz? You've been ignoring us all and staring at the window for the last hour.
Locke asks me as I stand up and walk over to the window, looking out at the dark forest.
How long is Kelly going to be?
I can't focus on the movie the guys chose or the food that East brought. All I can think about is how my brother and Kelly are together. I think back to all the times he texted me about Kelly. The way she blushed when I guessed she was with someone, but didn't tell me anything. It was right there all along, and I never guessed. I'm such an idiot for not realizing.
Kenzie,
Enzo says firmly, and I turn to look at him and all the guys who are staring at me. East turns off the movie as Enzo gets up and walks over to me. The twins give me worried glances, and I know I'm going to have to make something up or tell them the truth. I glance at East, wondering if he knew, considering he is Ryan's best friend. Surely, he must have known something about them.
What's going on?
He asks, rubbing a hand down my arm. But I don't get a chance to reply as the cabin door is knocked on once before the door is opened, and Kelly walks in. The moment I see her, all I can think of is how she kissed Ryan. How she said she loved him. She's been there with him all this time, and it's been ages. The flushed cheeks, the messed up buttons on her coat suggest she is sleeping with him, too. She knows my brother is working with the rebels, and knows my brother helped kill Mr. Layan. What else has she been hiding from me?
Hey, I'm sorry about earlier. I was just stressed,
she says as she starts to take her coat off.
Are you feeling better now?
I snap, knowing my brother has made her feel better. She stops undoing her coat to stare at me.
"What's your problem?"
she asks me, her eyes widening as she takes in how angry I am. If looks could kill, I doubt she'd be standing.
"Oh, I don't know, Kelly. Perhaps it's the fact my best friend is fucking my brother,"
I say, and there's silence in the room as I stare at her. She nods at me, her shoulders dropping.
"How long have you known? How did you find out?"
she asks. "Since I followed you and saw you kissing him through a window earlier tonight," I tell her.
"Did you hear anything we said?"
she asks, and I glance around the room, seeing all the guys watching us with worried glances, but they are smart enough not to say anything. I can't say anything about the rebels and my brother in front of them all. It's just not smart. They wouldn't trust her around me ever again, and I need to find a way to get my brother and Kelly out of this mess. I'm mad, but they're still two of the people I care about the most.
"Nothing. Once I saw you, I didn't want to stay for the show," I answer.
"Look, I'm sorry, but I love him. I've always liked him, growing up, but last Christmas it became something more. Then we started texting and meeting up," she says, her voice drifting off as I walk around her towards the door and hold it open.
"How can I ever trust you again? You're meant to be my friend, and you've been lying to me for months. I just can't deal with you with this right now. Can you leave?"
I ask her, watching as she wipes a few tears away and walks away from me. She stops in the doorway and looks back at me.
"You can't help who you fall in love with. You should know that, Kenz. Don't hate me for loving your brother. I couldn't help it. I am sorry I lied to you,"
she tells me and then leaves. I watch her walk away and wrap my arms around myself. I don't trust her because she still didn't tell me about the rebels and everything that happened. I can't help but hope she comes to me later and says something. Maybe she just didn't want the guys to hear.
"Kenz,"
East says, coming over to me, shutting the door and pulling me into his arms. I rest my head on his chest and hug him back.
"Did you know?"
I ask East, and he rubs his hands down my back.
"No idea. Ryan said he was dating someone he met at Christmas, but he never said who. I guessed it was someone he works with."
"I just don't get why she didn't tell me. I mean, I wouldn't have been against them being together, but to lie to me all this time?"
I ask, but don't want an answer, and East seems to realize it.
"Maybe she was scared she would lose your friendship,"
I hear Locke say, and I pull away from East to walk over to the sofa and sit next to him. I look over at Enzo, who is leaning against the window.
"I want to get drunk again. Can we find wherever Mr. Daniels hid the vodka?"
I ask him. He smirks at me.
"Under the kitchen sink, behind the cleaning stuff. There should be vodka, whiskey, and possibly some rum,"
he answers.
"How do you know that?"
Locke questions as he and Logan wander into the kitchen to check. Sure enough, they walk back in with vodka, whiskey, and half a bottle of rum.
"I've been down here a few times before Kenzie moved in. He always has some extra down there,"
he answers.
"Are you sure we should be drinking this? You're not 18 yet, Miss Crow,"
East says mockingly. His impression of Mr. Daniels' voice is eerie. I shrug.
"A week isn't going to make much of a difference,"
I reply, snagging the bottle of rum from Logan.
"It's your birthday next week,"
Locke asks, his eyebrows raised.
"Shit, it is next Wednesday, isn't it?"
East mutters, before taking a swig from one of the bottles.
"Why didn't you say anything?"
Logan asks, snagging the bottle back from East. "I guess between being stabbed, all the training, and Mr. Leyen turning up dead, a birthday party didn't seem appropriate," I answer with a small smile.
"Screw that," Locke says. "Definitely screw that,"
Logan reiterates.
"I hereby call this an early celebration of Kenzie's birthday,"
East says, snatching the bottle back again and raising it as if in toast.
"Happy early birthday, Kenz,"
he adds, and then takes a swig. I follow suit, and so does Locke, who's holding the other bottle. East and Locke pass their bottles to Logan and Enzo, who both take a drink too. Let me grab some glasses, I say, standing up from the sofa. I make my way into the kitchen area and grab 5 glasses, and attempt not to drop them as I wander back to the sofa. I place the glasses onto the coffee table and slide back onto my seat.
You made that look so difficult, Kenzie, Logan says teasingly.
I didn't want to drop them, okay? I reply.
You weren't walking on a tightrope, he replies.
Not everyone was blessed with coordination. I sucked at sports in the human school I went to, I say.
You went to a human school?
Enzo asks curiously. Yeah, I went to the local comprehensive school. My mum thought it would be good for me to mix with human kids as well as marked, I guess. I ended up loving a few of the human subjects, though. I wanted to go to university next year, but I had to let go of that dream because of, well, marked powers and all, I say, sighing.
What did you want to do?
East asks, sliding down on the sofa next to me. I'm not completely sure, to be honest. There were a few things I enjoyed. I had to leave my A-levels halfway through, though, so not much chance now, I say bitterly. Even I'm shocked at how bitter my voice sounds.
That sucks, Locke says. Can't you go back and do it later? Logan asks.
I could, but I guess I'll just get a normal marked job. Maybe I'll teach or be a healer? Hell, they'll probably offer me a job at the council just because of my stupid marks, I answer.
There are some marked who take jobs in human society,
East says gently. I shake my head, pushing the foolish ideas away. I wasn't going to be a normal human. I wasn't born to be that. It's okay. I think since being marked with all 12, I've accepted the fact my life is going to be different to what I thought it would be before, I reply. I catch the concerned looks on the guys' faces and decide that's enough moping for now. Ugh, sorry guys. Total downer on my own early birthday party. Let's play a drinking game, shall we? I ask, leaning forward and pouring drinks into all the glasses.
What are we going to play? Locke asks, a roguish smile on his face.
I think for a moment. Well, there's the card game ones, but I'm not sure we have a deck here. I trail off, trying to figure out where, if at all, Mr. Daniels would leave a deck of cards.
We could always play a game that doesn't require cards, Logan suggests.
Like what? I ask.
Never have I ever,
he answers, a matching roguish smile taking over his face, as is on his twins. East and Enzo groan. What? I ask, looking at them.
Logan or Locke always suggest it. They're terrible,
East answers.
You're only saying that because you're a man whore that clearly gets drunk too easily,
Locke says, downing half of his drink. Man whore? I look across at the 4 guys sitting with me. I really don't want to know all the things they've done, knowing the kind of statements that are normally made in this game. Maybe this isn't such a clever idea, I suggest.
Kenzie, what dirty secrets are you trying to hide from us?
Logan teases. I laugh so hard, and suddenly, a snort escapes. I pull a mortified face as my eyes meet East's, who laughs at me. Yeah, not so many dirty secrets here, I reply, trying to swiftly move on from the snort laughter.
Did you just snort? Locke asks.
Or not. Just a little, I reply, trying to laugh it off. I take a big drink from my glass of rum.
Well, wasn't that adorable?
Enzo says. Please, shut up now, I plead, looking between them all.
Fine, we'll shut up, but we're playing a drinking game, Logan replies. I know where the cards are,
Enzo adds, moving away from the window and heading for Mr. Daniel's room. I watch the bedroom door, waiting for Enzo to return. The fact you know where stuff is in Mr. Daniel's bedroom is beyond creepy, I mutter, as Enzo walks back in with the deck of cards.
Hey now, Don't try and draw attention away from the fact you are well and truly about to get smashed losing this game, Mackenzie,
he says, laying the cards out across the coffee table. What are we playing?
I ask. You're going to ride the bus, he answers.
Ride the bus? I ask quizzically, looking at the cards faced down across the table. He flips the first card over, a 7.
Which card on the next row, and will it be higher or lower, Mackenzie?
He questions. The one closer to me, and higher? I guess. He flips over the card, a 6.
Drink up, Kens,
Logan says, nudging my drink towards me. I look at the 7 rows of cards that I'm guessing I have to make it through. I have to get them all right to finish, right? I ask, the dread already pooling in my stomach. Enzo nods.
Let's hope you can hold your booze better than the twins can,
East says, throwing an arm over my shoulders. I sink into him and take a sip of my drink, feeling the warmth of his body against mine warm me outside, as the drink warms me from inside. Enzo replaces the first 2 cards that were flipped for me to start again.
Ready?
Ready to guess them all wrong and get blindly drunk? Yeah, sure. Why not? Bring it, I mutter. He flips the new first card over. Chapter 31. Kenzie. Waking up sandwiched between the twins probably would have been nice if it wasn't for Logan's snores in my ear. I force open my eyes, despite the banging already settling into my head, and look down. At least I'm still dressed. I've had enough awkward nudity recently to last a lifetime. I roll over, closer to Locke to escape Logan's soft snoring, only to find his gentle snores match his twins. Great. I slide down to the bottom of the bed and climb off, coming to a halt when I realize where I am. Shit, why are we sleeping in Mr. Daniel's room? I look around at the practically bare room. No wonder Enzo found the cards so easily. There's barely anything in here. Slinking quietly out the door, I creep through the cabin, noting a sleeping Enzo on the sofa as I pass him by. I reach my bedroom and slip inside, closing the door softly behind me. I turn to face the room and let out a half scream, smacking my hand over my mouth to cut it off before I wake anyone. Holy shit. Easton Black is lying naked in my bed. Completely fucking naked. I stand there gaping, my mouth opening and closing like a fish. After a few seconds, I realize he's asleep, the slight movement of his sculpted chest rising and falling. At least I didn't wake him. I can't help but run my eyes across him one last time, and then turn to leave. Morning, Kenzie. East's voice rumbles from behind me as I reach for the door handle. Shit. Morning, East, I choke out.
Enjoy the view,
he asks. View?
Don't play innocent now, Kenz. I know you looked,
he teases. I didn't.
You're more than welcome to continue your perusal,
he adds, cutting off my denial. I turn around, deliberately keeping my eyes on his face. I don't know what you mean, East, but I do need to grab some clothes. Maybe you could do the same? I suggest, walking across to the chest of drawers. I rifle through them hastily, grabbing my underwear, jeans, and a black camisole top. I feel East before I hear him, his hot breath on my neck as his hands slide around my waist.
You could always take some clothes off instead,
he suggests, whispering into my ear. I shiver, feeling the tremble run right through me. Dropping the clothes in my hands to the floor, I turn around to face him, caged between his body and the chest of drawers. He slides a hand behind my neck and pulls me toward him, stopping just before our lips can meet. I lean forward and close the gap between us, gently kissing him as I slide my own hands around his back,
feeling his muscles tense under my touch. The kiss doesn't stay gentle for long. East deepens it as he moves his hands down my body, and then slips them back around me, lifting me on top of the chest of drawers. I wrap my legs around him as he presses in close, feeling every inch of him pushed up against me. He moves his hands over my shirt, teasing as he runs his fingertips over the edges of my bra. I reach up, running my fingers through his soft, light brown hair. He pulls his lips away from mine and kisses down my neck and down to my chest. He tugs my shirt down, continuing to trail kisses and gentle bites across me. The sound of something being knocked over in the next room drags me to my senses.
Shit, we've got to stop,
I say, pulling his head back up to look at me.
Why?
He asks, confused. I turn my head to the closed door, knowing Enzo, Logan, and Locke are on the other side. With the dynamic of whatever relationship there is between us not decided, it wouldn't be fair for me to just do this, would it? That's not even including my feelings for Mr. Daniels, which are utterly pointless anyway. Sighing, I turn back to East.
I just can't. The others...
I begin, but trail off, unable to complete the sentence. I chew on my lip nervously.
It's okay, Kenz. The twins know how I feel, and I know how they feel,
he says, running a soothing hand up and down my back. I stay silent, not able to form the words I want to say.
Enzo too, huh?
He adds gently. I nod mutely. That's half of it, anyway.
We can sort that all out first, then. There's no rush,
he says, dropping a gentle kiss onto my forehead before untangling our bodies and stepping away. He pulls on his boxers and jeans before stepping back to me and kissing me hard. He steps back again and looks at me expectantly, waiting for me to say something.
I better get ready for class,
I reply nervously, jumping down off the chest of drawers.
Yeah, because you showing up late for a class is completely unheard of. Wouldn't want to ruin your stellar reputation as a star pupil now, would you?
He says teasingly. And just like that, the tension is broken. I laugh.
Hey, I'm not late to all my classes,
I grumble.
Really?
He asks. Yeah, I show up to Mr. Daniels' classes on time. I can't really make up excuses for being late when I live in the cabin with him, I reply jokingly, grabbing the fresh set of clothes I'd dropped to change into. What's the time anyway? I ask as I walk towards the door to head to the bathroom for a quick shower.
Well, you're already 30 minutes late to fire class, he says.
Wait, already 30 minutes late?
I ask, groaning.
Just great. Luckily, it's your favorite teacher, Kenz, he replies sarcastically as I exit the room. Shit, Miss Tinder is going to kill me.
Chapter 32. Kenzie.
Mr. Daniels, I'm sure Miss Crow will be here any moment,
I hear Miss Tinder say as I walk into fire class. The whole class is sitting, talking, or playing on their phones when I walk in. They all stop to look at me with surprise. Hey, it's not like I don't turn up to my classes. I'm just usually late. I glance at the clock on the wall. Maybe not this late, though.
Miss Crow, this is completely unacceptable. You are 45 minutes late, and I don't know why I'm not surprised when I should be. Honestly, it's like you believe your 12 marks make you impervious to the rules of this academy.
She turns to me as she speaks, but my eyes are locked on Mr. Daniels, who shakes his head as he looks me over. He looks stressed today, with his brown hair messy, and looks like he has run his fingers through it a few times, and his clothes are wrinkled, which is unlike him. He's also missing his glasses, which are normally only off during our training.
Sorry, I'm late,
Enzo says,
walking into the room after me and not even looking at Mr. Daniels or Miss Tinder as he takes his seat. Miss Tinder doesn't even look his way, or care that he is late. Just me.
Outside now, Miss Crow,
Mr. Daniels says, just as I go to sit down. I turn to see him walking out of the classroom and look over at Miss Tinder.
Go, and don't be long, she tells me.
I nod and walk out of the classroom, pulling the door closed behind me. I turn to see Mr. Daniels standing in the middle of the empty corridor with his arms crossed and an expression that makes me want to hide. Shit.
So,
I ask, wondering why he dragged me out here and is giving me this look.
Miss Crow, I just don't even know where to start with you,
he says and runs a hand through his hair as he watches me.
Quietly? My head is banging,
I sigh, placing my hand against my head and knowing I should have grabbed some food or something earlier. I didn't stop when I jumped into the shower and then ran to class. I haven't had time to even think about everything that happened with Kelly and Ryan. I try to nip that thought in the bud. I can't even think about it at the moment, as all I want to do is find Kelly and talk to her. As I watch Mr. Daniels walking over to me, I get what Kelly was talking about when she said you don't choose who you fall for. You really don't. Mr. Daniels stops in front of me, placing his hand on my head, and I feel him healing me before stepping away.
Why did you heal me?
I ask him, relief spreading over me now that my head doesn't hurt anymore.
So that I can shout at you for getting drunk with your friends last night in my house,
he says, and I mentally cringe.
Shit, he must have come back at some point.
When I don't say anything, he continues.
I came back from the meeting I told you about, to find you dancing on the coffee table,
he tells me. A flashback of last night runs through my mind.
At least I had my clothes on, or from what I can remember,
I say, making him groan and look at me closely as I smile at him. We both start laughing after an awkward silence, and he shakes his head.
What am I going to do with you, Miss Crow?
He asks, stepping closer to me and placing his hand on my arm.
What do you want to do, Mr. Daniels?
I ask, not able to stop the tempting words leaving my lips.
You don't want to know,
he whispers, his face inches away from mine. I can smell the body wash he uses, the same stuff I used quickly in the shower this morning.
What's your first name?
I ask him, not moving as we stand close to each other, our lips inches apart, and my hand moves to rest on his chest without me thinking about it. It just feels natural.
It's,
he starts to say, and then he suddenly jumps away when the door is opened behind me.
I need to start my lesson, Mr. Daniels,
Miss Tinder's voice says behind me, her voice chipped and annoyed as I turn to see her looking between us.
We will finish speaking about this later, Miss Crow,
he says, his tone back to the cold and emotionless tone that I'm used to. I nod, walking back into the classroom and taking the empty seat next to Enzo as he smirks at me.
What did Mr. Dead Serious want this morning?
Enzo asks me.
He came back at some point last night and saw me dancing on the table,
I tell him, and he laughs, making several people turn to look at us. Miss Tinder slams the door shut after she walks into the room, and everyone goes quiet. I glance behind me when I hear someone cough and see Stella sitting with her feet on the table at the back of the class and glaring at me. Just great. Why is she here?
So, class, now that the disruptions are out of the way, we shall begin. We have been studying how to control your fire mark. It's very easy to make a large fire and much harder to make only a small amount, like lighting a candle without melting the entire thing,
Miss Tinder says after clapping her hands. I look down at the three candles in holders on the table in front of me, and it makes sense what we are going to be doing now.
Please spend the next hour lighting the candles. There are spares at the front if you melt yours. Once you are done, you may leave and have a study period, she tells the class.